Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Welcome to Hour 2 of The Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. Joe Pyburn sitting here with me in the Roy Robinson RV Remote Studios. Rob Ensley, Matt Nelson coming at you from the studio, downtown Seattle. And on the phone, he's the award-winning author of hundreds of magazine articles and several, over a dozen books, including the one we've got in our hands right here, Mastering Mule Deer. He is Wayne Van Zwall. Good morning, Wayne, and thanks for joining us.
Morning, Wayne.
Morning, Wayne. Wayne, could you get him a new copy? Yeah. He needs a new copy of that book. It's just tattered. The hardback has fallen off. I'm looking at it on FaceTime.
He's got notes in it.
It's done.
That's the way I like to see that.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
classic.
Wayne, you know, like Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth, right? Well, there's folks that got a plan for opening day, and you know what? About this time of day, it starts getting light up. There ain't any deer right there. You've been punched in the mouth. What do you do? Your opening day plan is shot. Let's take us back to basics. How are you going to get these guys on a deer or two this morning, Wayne Van Zwall?
Well, there are a couple of ways that you can get punched here. One is just finding another hunter in your favorite spot, a hunter you didn't expect there. And another is the weather. And one thing I've noticed this week already is the cold mornings, and that should be good for hunters. That's right. And deer move more in the cool weather. And I think they're still on summer range. It isn't likely that they'll be moving to winter range anytime soon, but I think in the cold weather, one thing I found to work is if you've got a little competition in the area, sit still a little bit longer than anybody else. About mid-morning, a lot of hunters get tired of being cold and not seeing deer, and they get up and move around, and that stirs up the deer. I know that in some areas, we all want to be out there for first light, and early morning is certainly a great time, especially on the opener. But a real productive time is between 11 and 1, because that's when a lot of hunters get up, they rustle about, perhaps they go back to the rig or to their cabin or tent and fix lunch, and that moves deer. So I think I'm not a patient guy, and I'm up, often up and moving around when I should be sitting. But if you want to see more deer on opening day, regardless of the conditions, especially though if you have competition, sit still for a while longer.
Well, you've mentioned a couple of the conditions that we have this year, and one is well below average temperatures. We've seen snow on the mountains for the first time, and you know, quite often when we talked during the week, Wayne, we kind of joked about seeing more grasshoppers than deer this time of year. So, along with the colder temperatures, we also have a summertime that was marked by drought, high temperatures, and fires. So, how do you approach these fundamental shifts in the availability of forage in these areas with regard to burns or maybe just scorched areas from the drought?
Yeah, well, the burns are great places to hunt after they've started to recover. Some of these burns have lasted well into the fall, and they haven't and aren't going to recover before snowfall. So I'd skip those. I'm in the middle of a rangeland here in eastern Washington that was badly burned last year, several hundred thousand acres, and we didn't get enough rain this year to regenerate forage on the hills. So those animals are going to be down in the orchards where they were last winter. They've spread out a bit. They aren't going to be congregated like they would as wintering herds, but they'll certainly look for green forage. Now, forage doesn't have to be green to be nutritious, and the deer know that. And in the forest, I'd certainly look, the standing forest, I'd certainly look for low browse that hasn't been touched by fire. And I think that you'll find deer in places that you would normally find deer.
Wayne, Tom mentioned the drought. You know, it's been extremely hot over in eastern Washington since last spring. How has that affected, you know, like the south-facing slopes? I mean, we haven't been over there scouting yet. I wish we had had time to get over there and run around a little bit and poke around in some of these areas. But are they just going to be scorched earth going into this weekend, or is there going to be some feed available on those south-facing slopes for these mule deer over there?
Well, I think you're right that some of those souths are going to be less productive as far as forage is concerned. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that deer are fairly short hair still in the summer coats, and they like early morning sun on mornings that, like this morning, are at or near freezing or below freezing. And so I've been really successful in mountain country, poking around rock slides that face east early in the morning and face south and east. And as soon as that first light hits, even if you don't see the forage, there can be a lot of deer in that country. And especially if you're hunting alpine areas, those areas rarely turn green. But there are a lot of low, tender, and succulent forbs, nutritious forbs, that stay palatable all summer long, whether or not they have rain, because there's snow melt up there and little rivulets of water irrigate these patches of forbs, and the deer find them even if you can't see them between the rocks. So I'd still look to those souths and east-facing slopes early.
So we've been talking about this quite a bit, water. How often do deer need to go to water? We understand that it's different all over the place based on what's in the food, like how much moisture is in their food. But what, like in very dry, arid areas, how often does a deer need to go to water?
Well, that's a good question, because as you say, that it does vary by area and by forage. There are desert mule deer. It's a subspecies of mule deer that really get along without very much free water. All animals need water, but they don't need free water. In other words, they don't have to drink. And mule deer in most of their country are like that. However, like most animals, even if they don't have to drink, they prefer to drink, and they like to drink daily. That doesn't mean they're going to drink during the daytime, because especially under hunting pressure, deer limit their movements to the evening and at night. And so I certainly wouldn't sit on water holes hoping to get your deer this fall.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we've been just kind of kicking it around. You know, we had this dry summer, and, you know, I spend so much time up in the high mountains, and there's like creeks up there, but there's not a lot of like standing water. I don't know that I've ever seen a mule deer just like hunkered over a little puddle or the creek drinking water, you know. And I would imagine our high country mule deer here, they probably get more than enough water just out of their food, you know.
They do that. That's a good observation. You very rarely see a deer drink. You'll see elk do that occasionally. They like the water a little bit more than deer do, and they're bigger. But no, they aren't like cattle. They take a sip here and there, and sometimes from water that you don't even see. Those little snowmelt rivulets that I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with the author Wayne Van Zwal this morning. Of course, it's opening day of hunting season, and a lot of guys will confuse hiking with hunting, Wayne, and you know, you mentioned sitting down. Well, you say sitting down, and now you're inferring glassing, and so give us a couple strategies for looking through the shrub steppe that we have in the Okanagan, and what specifically can you coach the uneducated or maybe inexperienced hunter? What is he looking for specifically with regard to spotting deer, and how does he go about breaking apart a piece of structure with the glass?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, that's even if you've been glassing for a while, you can fall into bad habits. First of all, we all want to see a big buck, and we all want to see the whole thing. That's what we're out there looking for. But quite often, certainly the older bucks are going to stay at least partly hidden. They just have a habit of being always near or in cover. And even if you don't see it as cover, you know, sagebrush can be terrific cover, even if the deer is mostly exposed because they're so well camouflaged. I remember guiding a deer hunter once, and I saw a big buck right below us in the sagebrush, and I could not point it out to him. He couldn't find it in his scope. I think he was looking for an exposed deer that fit his image of what a mule deer should look like, not the pieces that we saw, although we saw enough to shoot. So I think looking for pieces is one thing to do. And another thing, look low. Now, deer are shorter than you think, than most people think. I've caught myself looking too high. A big mule deer might stand 40 inches at the shoulder, maybe a little bit more, but a lot of people are glassing. I've seen people glass as if they were looking for elk, and it doesn't take much to hide a deer. Another thing to keep in mind is sometimes they aren't in what we typically think of as cover. A bush will hide a mule deer. I walked right by a mule deer no more certainly than 10 feet from him and still hunted by him and just happened to see him when I turned around. Another thing to keep in mind when you're glassing, and this is not just when you're sitting, but of course when you're moving, look around all the time, not just ahead. Don't assume that you covered the country behind you just because you walked through it, because often a mule deer, once he sees you, will hide and then pop out after you've passed. I once watched one do that when a friend and I were paralleling each other on opposite ridges about 400 yards apart. And I spotted this deer in its bed in a low bush, and he walked almost to it. The deer turned his head. Either smelled or heard my friend before he got into view. The deer got out of its bed, walked downhill unconcernedly for about 20 yards, stopped, watched my partner walk right through its bed, and after my partner had gone by, walked right back up to its bed and lay down.
I just know that deer was stupid.
At the end of that ridge, I signaled to my partner to go back through, and he killed the deer.
Only because I
had seen it and we knew where it was, and he went back exactly on that same path. And was hunting it then and going very slowly and downwind.
I'm glad he did that because if it would have been one of the guys that's sitting here at the table with me, they would have told that story until I didn't want to hunt them anymore. And that would definitely
We've got stories, Wayne. Someday we'll stop by your house over there and just watch. They've got way too many stories. We all have stories.
Anyway, to the glassing, one thing. So many people pan when they glass. Yeah, just hold the glass still. Read the field, still field. Brace your arms so that it's still, because you can't see things if you aren't still. Just look at a deer when he wants to. He was looking at you. He's alert, and thinks there might be something there. What did you do? Hold its head very, very still. And you need to hold the glass that way. Read with your eyes the field methodically as you would the page of a book, then move the glass.
Great tips. Yep. Wayne Van Zwall, award-winning author of Mastering Mule Deer and so many others. Wayne, we thank you for your time today, and we thank you for the trip, your deer hunting tips. I think there's going to be a buck hanging from the pole this evening.
Good luck this season, Wayne.
Thanks, Wayne.
Well, thank you, guys.
Always appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you. No, thank you for having me. Good luck in the field.
All right.
Appreciate it, Wayne. Good luck to you, too. Take care. All right. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report is brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
A bunch of local lakes have been stocked with rainbows for the winter trout fishery. One of those is Kitsap Lake near Bremerton. They got a shot of 3,500 trout a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, the trout whisperer, Dave Johnson from Kitsap Marina, has been on Kitsap Lake a couple times since then. It says the trout fishing is red hot. No surprise there. Dave's been trolling woolly buggers close to the surface, and the action's been nonstop. He said the weeds are a problem near the edges of the lake. He's been fishing the deeper water in the center of the lake to stay away from the weeds. He's not trolling flies. He'll run a Thomas Buoyant spoon, and that works just as well. Kitsap Lake will fish good for trout well into the winter months. For more winter trout fishing opportunities, check out the Catchable Trout Plant page on the WDFW website.
Cast and Blast on the Yak. Bob Miller from Red's Fly Shop in the Yakima River said the trout are starting to stack up in those deep pools right now. Miller suggests fishing size 18 mayfly nymphs or stonefly nymphs for trout on the Yakima. The flows are super low right now, which makes it easy to both float and wade the river. Best of all, there's no need to get on the water early. Miller says it's banker's hours fishing on the Yakima right now, and Red's is releasing pheasants. The Sporting Clays range is open, and the restaurant's open Thursday through Sunday. Give Red's Fly Shop a call if you're looking for a shuttle on the river. Their shuttle runs 7 days a week on the Yakima River.
The general rifle season opens today statewide for deer hunters. Mule deer hunting is open from October 16th through the 26th on the east side of the mountains. Hunters get a few extra days to harvest a whitetail in select eastern Washington units, with that season running through October 29th. On the west side of the mountains, the blacktail season runs from October 16th through the 31st, and the late blacktail season runs from November 18th through the 21st. Roughly 60% of the blacktails are taken each year on the late season hunt in western Washington.
Waterfowl season also opens this weekend, with that season running from today through the 24th of October. There's a two-day closure, then the season reopens again on October 27th and runs through the end of January. Overall, waterfowl counts are down somewhat this year because of the drought in the western United States and Canada. Coming off 50-year highs, though, the duck numbers should still be above average this season. Goose counts look good, however, and biologists expect a huge flight of snow geese on the west side and above average numbers of honkers as well.
Eastern Washington pheasant opener on deck. Hunters and bird dogs alike are anxiously waiting the pheasant opener in Eastern Washington next Saturday. That season runs from October 23rd through January 17th. General consensus is that quail and chucker numbers might be up in Eastern Washington, and pheasant numbers could be down a bit because of those drought conditions experienced statewide since last spring. Regardless, we'll know by next weekend how well those birds have fared since spring.
WDFW will be hosting a virtual town hall meeting on October 26th to discuss options for the upcoming coastal steelhead season. Unprecedented angling restrictions were placed on the coastal rivers last winter in an attempt to get depressed numbers of steelhead back to the spawning grounds. Fisheries managers want to hash out all the angling opportunities ahead of time through town hall meetings, and have set up an ad hoc 12-member Coastal Steelhead Advisory Board to oversee the meetings. The meeting is set for 5 p.m. on October 26th, and more information and a link to attend can be found on the WDFW website.
There's yet another round of razor clam digs set to begin on the Washington coast this week. Digs start on Tuesday, October 19th, and run through October 25th. There's opportunity to dig at all four coastal beaches during that time. These are all evening digs, so be sure to bring a headlamp or lantern along. Digging usually starts around 2 hours for the low tide, and there's a bonus limit of 20 razor clams per person this winter. Bob Buchanan from Bomac Enterprises in Sumner said the late-night digs and the brutal weather kept a lot of clammers at home on the last set of digs. This next dig should be lights out if the weather holds up.
Get to the Port of Everett for those winter crab. Ian O'Hearn from John Sporting Goods in Everett says winter crabbing has been exceptional right out of Everett. The Mukilteo Everett area has been producing as well. He recommends dropping your pots in between 50 and 100 feet of water. The usual baits like chicken legs, mackerel, fish carcasses, or tuna bloodline from raised baits all work great. He recommends adding at least 10 pounds of weight to your pot when fishing in less than 100 feet of water, and more if you're fishing deeper. The top sellers at the store have been those SMI collapsible pots or the four-door octagon pot from SMI. Crabbing's open 7 days a week in select marine areas. The limit is 5 crabs a day, and they're open through the end of the year.
The Northwest Outdoor Report has been brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
So Christmas crab, Christmas razor clams, mm-hmm. Right?
Christmas right. Mule deer, Christmas snow goose, Christmas mallard.
I would really like to have a mule deer for Halloween. That's what I would like to get to.
Dave Johnson said the north end of Hood Canal was really good for crabbing as well. I think it's open north of Ayak Point up in that area there. So yeah, he said they're roping the crab pretty good in there. Haven't heard much on the squid front. Squid's been slow in Puget Sound. I mean, Bobby Cannon said there's been a few in that Tacoma area, but I talked to a couple guys at Outdoor Emporium this week, and just pretty quiet in Elliott Bay. So hopefully that lights up quick, because that was just red hot all last winter here in Puget Sound. So we'll kind of see how that goes.
The drought affected them, because there's not a lot of feed on the south facing slope.
Mm-hmm.
So they're
well, got to look in the buck brush for those things. Yeah. I'll be in the buck brush right now, picking away at some of those chitlins in there. Also, vortexoptics.com. We've got an apparel code on there. Jump on there and enter Outdoor Line to get your discount on your apparel from Vortex Optics right now.
And they got some cool stuff.
They got some cool fall and winter gear for sure. No question about it. And again, just, you know, spending some time on the range with that stuff. It's just the fact that you don't have to pack a rangefinder anymore. The rangefinder binos are absolutely worth their weight in gold. Some of the best quality optics that you can have, and a pan ranging aspect to those to the Razor 5000s to let you scoot through. And that's one of the things that during last segment I was kind of going to talk to Wayne Van Zwall about too. But he's pretty old school with regard to scouting, and we can learn so much these days about the habitats by using Google Earth and by using Onyx, right? And you know, one of the things I wanted to mention though is when you're sitting there glassing and using those laser rangefinders, is doggone it, get those ranges of the areas that you know that you're looking at right away. So
practice.
You know, that's one less thing you need to do when that buck steps out, is figure out how far they are.
Well, a lot of times you don't have time. You got 2 seconds.
That's true.
You got to rip one off, and you got to have stuff figured out ahead of time. Joe, you know, we're heading out right after the show. Are you taking your range finding binocs? Are you bringing your Vortex UHDs?
No, nope, I'm taking the range finder.
Okay.
Those tens are sweet. And, you know, for the terrain we're going to be in, I don't think I need the big boys. But you know, so one thing on our bear hunt, Rob, Nick had a competing pair of binoculars, a very high end pair of binoculars,
a very, very high end pair of binoculars. Yes. Yeah.
And obviously Mark Boardman from Vortex was with us on that hunt. So we were like, oh, well, hey, Nick, check these out. He's looking through those UHDs.
He was sold.
Which are...
And UHDs like, oh. are crystal,
and
man.
So I grabbed the pair of binoculars that we won't mention, and I looked through them, and I've looked through them before, and then I grabbed the UHDs, and I'm like, oh, dude, they blow...
The UHDs are sweet,
they're blowing them away.
I have a hard time leaving them at home. I mean, I love the range-finding binocs, and they're great to look through, you know, because we do a lot of glass, and we'll sit for an hour or two and just sit in one spot and glass and glass and glass. Mm-hmm. But... you know, it's nice to not pack along an extra range finder. You know, it's just more weight because we carry a lot of
crap.
Well,
you don't need to because I'll have it. And
yeah, well, that's true. I might just bring the UHDs.
I'll be calling out the range.
I might just bring the UHDs.
You'll say.
Range.
Range.
Yeah, range, range, as the deer's running away from me.
Yeah.
That's usually what happens. Range, range. And Joe's like, 220, 240, 260, 283, 300, 360. Okay, he stopped. He's at 420 now, and then I'm ready.
Yeah.
You know, then I'm ready. I finally got a rest. You know, I got a drink of water from my 4 gallons of water that I like to carry, you know. Joe's slowly training me up here.
The cool thing is you don't have to, like, if guys haven't played with the new Fury HDs, you don't have to push the button and push the button.
No.
You just hold the button on the deer as it's running, and it's
it
like
scans.
Like Rob said, 220, 240, 260.
We're in Idaho, and I'm trying to get my bipod down on the front of my rifle, and they're spring loaded. So I pull the one side down, and it locks in. Well, then I pulled the other side down, and it had been kind of cold. So the little locking mechanism was frozen. So I pulled it down, I let go. Pew! It shoots right back up in there. And the buck's just like, I know what that is.
He looked right
off. He looked right at us. I'm like,
And he was close. He was like, what?
Oh, 180. It was like, easy. And then by the time it was over, I think it was like 340 or I don't know what it was. It all worked out fine.
You
and plus,
him,
he got he slid into the bottom of a canyon too, which was really cool.
Yeah, he slid all the way to the bottom.
That was
super cool.
Yeah, you're welcome. Sorry, buddy.
Perfect. All right, we're going to pop out here, break. On the other side, Mike Zavadlo, Autumn on the Olympic Peninsula, and maybe a steelhead preview as well, right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's Wheelhouse, brought to you by Wellcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Welcome to the Wheelhouse here on 710 ESPN's The Outdoor Line. I'm Tom Nelson. That's Joey Pyburn coming at you from the Roy Robinson RV Remote Studios. Rob Ensley, Matt Nelson coming at them from the Seattle studio, and we're reaching over to the Olympic Peninsula and finding our buddy Mike Zavadlo of Mike Z's Guide Service. How you doing, Mike? Welcome to the show.
Hey, doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Finally drying out. What a wet day out there today. Oh, man.
Yeah, it sounded like it was just dumping out there today. I talked to, it was raining yesterday, wasn't it? I called you yesterday, and you guys were freezing your rear ends off out there.
Yeah, yesterday morning was really cold. Today wasn't quite so cold this morning, but then the wind started picking up and the leaves started blowing, and it started to get ugly.
Yeah, perfect. Sounds like fall on the coast. You guys have been catching some silvers, man. You've been twitching up some coho and throwing some hoochie spinners and stuff, and that's why we got you on. I mean, there's actually a pile of coho in these rivers over here in Puget Sound too. The Green, the Skagit, a bunch of fish in the Cowlitz, the Humps kicking out fish. People are targeting cohos all over the place right now, and there's no one better to tell them how to fish some of these techniques than you, Mike. As you know, twitch and jigs and hoochie spinners and whatever else you're doing there. Twitch and jigs, for instance, how do people approach that? I mean, you're not jigging, you're twitching the jig. So how do they go about twitching these jigs for a newbie that just went and bought some twitching jigs and they're looking to target some coho?
So first off, the setup that I use is a 7 foot, 8 to 17 pound, pretty stiff rod, 30 pound braid with a 15 pound Seaguar bumper and about 10 feet of that. And the trick is everybody wants to cast 90 degrees to the current, you know, straight across to the shoreline, but you need to cast 45 degrees down and across. So it comes down past that fish and it just wiggles right past them and they come up and grab it. Most people want to cast straight across and then you always get hung up and you're always losing jigs. If you cast 45, you can just twitch it with hardly reeling at all and let it swing right across.
And when you're twitching, you're literally just, you're cracking your wrist is all you're doing. You keep your elbow straight, basically, and you're just barely twitching your wrist, right? And then just pick up a little bit of line in between?
Yeah, so if you have enough current, if you twitch it and you drop your tip and it takes less than a second to tighten up that loop that you made, you're good to go, and you can just twitch it as it swings across. But if you twitch it and you drop your tip and it doesn't tighten up within a second, then you want to take one crank. So you just, if you're anchored up, just 45 and just jig it as it swings across, all the way across, and you'll feel them. They'll just hammer it. And it's just an easy way to get newbies to get them on jig. You just 45, twitch, 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 and they'll grab it.
3/8 ounce or 1/2 ounce jig head? What are you running in there?
It depends on the current. You know, if the current's faster, I'd go 1/2 ounce, the bullet heads. And then, you know, as it lightens up and the water clears up, go to 3/8. Purple, solid purple, purple and black, purple with a chartreuse head, purple with a orange head, bright pink, depending on if the water's colored, chartreuse green. So just kind of see what the water is and try, you know, one person with a bright color and one with a dark color and go that way and see which one they want that day.
Hoochie jigs or marabou? It sounds like you're fishing a bunch of marabou now, aren't you?
Marabou.
Yeah.
I go back and forth depending on the water height, but you know, even in low clear water, they'll eat one of those dark purple hoochie jigs, you know, just as good as they will a marabou jig. And if you watch a hoochie jig, it actually moves around in the water a little bit more than actually a marabou jig. So sometimes you switch it up. But I use both still.
And you guys were the ones that, well, actually it kind of came out of Alaska, but you guys were kind of the first to run hoochie spinners down here in Washington. And I tell you what, the Sky Comb is just closed now, but they were roping cohos in there on hoochie spinners. How do you go about setting up one? Because it's not like they're readily available on the pegs at the tackle shop. You kind of got to make them yourself, don't you, for the most part?
I get the 1.5 to 2 inch hoochies. And because this year and last year we have to use, well, this year we have to use single barbless hook instead of the trebles. Usually you can just snip the end off of the hoochie, slide it over the treble, and then put a split ring on and attach it to your spinner. But now you have to use a sidewash. So I do the same thing pretty much, but I side the hoochie all the way up over the split ring. So it goes spinner, hoochie, split ring, and then sidewash hook right below that. So the hoochie doesn't slide on the sidewash hook.
We're talking with Mike Zavadlo, Mike Z's Guide Service. You can find him on Facebook at Mike Z's Guide Service. And put this coho season in perspective for us. I know over here in Puget Sound area, it's been one for the books. Good numbers, good size. What's it looked like over there for you?
It's been pretty good. I mean, I wouldn't say phenomenal. I mean, we definitely have to work for them. And this year, you know, Stall Duck is the only river that we can actually keep cohos because it has a hatchery on it and we can keep hatchery cohos. But the Salda or the Ho, the Bogashiel, Kalawa, those are all wild. runs of coho, and we have to catch and release on those rivers. You can retain one Chinook on each one of those rivers, but all catch and release on wild cohos. And so it's been a fair year. I mean, I wouldn't say it's on fire by any means. Water dependent, you know, if we've got good water, fishing's been pretty good. But otherwise, you know, we're working for them once this water clears up.
Can you still use bait? Can you still run? Sorry, Joe. Can you still use eggs out there, or is that off limits now?
Yes, yes, we can. No, we can use bait.
Okay.
So we're you know, some of the deeper holes we're bobber fishing, you know, and catching some Chinook, but you know, we don't beat up on them. We'll catch a few here and there and just keep moving on. You know, just spread out your pressure. You know, don't go into one hole and just beat it up and let, you know, let the guys behind you catch a few too. And also, you know, if you're going down and passing people on the river, try to stay off the water when you go down. Don't go right over the holes below them because it makes it tough for the guys behind you.
Yeah, go behind them over by the bar. Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
Yep.
Sorry.
Yeah, or even, you know, down to the next hole. Don't go over the hole and just go rowing right over the top of it. Kind of stay off of it so everybody has a good chance of catching them.
So what do you think is going to happen out there this season, Mike, with the steelhead? Have you heard anything?
Steelhead? Prediction, no fishing out of a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Closed again all of April. So I'm predicting it's going to be the same as it was last year.
So that meeting, that virtual town hall's on the 26th. So, you know, you got basically a little more than a week, but that's kind of what you're expecting to come out of that Coastal Steelhead Advisory Board meeting. That's probably the same deal as last year.
Yep. Yep. I can't see it changing.
What's it going to take to dig out of this, man? I mean, it seems like a lot of the restrictions are being put. Well, I know that's a tough and open-ended question, but you know, it seems like a lot of the brunt of the conservation burden has been put on the backs of the sportsmen to no small extent. I mean, keeping us, you know, from fishing in boats is that's it. That's your answer, WDFW. I mean, you know, what do you see? What's it going to take, man?
Oh, well, taking the pressure off the OP is, you know, going to be the challenge, you know, trying to get our other fisheries open to spread the pressure out, you know, and I think that's going to be the key is getting the pressure spread out so it doesn't put all the, you know, all of it right here on the upper north OP. So if we can get those other fisheries going, you know, brood stocking, more hatcheries, you know, just get those people get opportunities on all these other rivers just to spread people out so we're all not beating on these fish because these fish, you know, they just can't take the pressure, you know, that all these people coming from other places because they have no choice. They want to catch steelhead, and I don't blame them.
Sure.
They want to
tell them
they're steelhead, they get some OP.
It is, you know, so, and that's a great point you made about brood stocking because, you know, the Snyder Creek run used to really, really provide a lot of opportunity. Is there really seriously any brood stock operations going on the peninsula at all anymore?
No, not right now. We had one on the Bogie and Kalawa for a bit, but that's kind of fell to the wayside. And because the Sawduck's a wild gene pool river now, there's no hatcheries, no steelhead hatchery anywhere on the Sawduck, brood stock or just standard hatchery.
Well, how much longer? Where are we at with regard to this coho run, and how much longer do you think it's going to hold out?
We fish cohos all the way to the end of November.
Nice.
So, I mean, yeah, it starts, you know, the fish start getting dark, you know, later in the season, but we still like to catch and release them on the sawduck and stuff, but it's still early and we still got plenty of time for these fish to come up and catch them. So, and we're supposed to get some more rain today. We're getting rain. And then this weekend supposed to get another really good push. So after that next weekend, you know, the river's calmed down, it should be a good fishery again. It should be really hopping.
And you guys got some big silvers in there, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know.
Some crankers, man. What are some of the big fish you've seen already this fall, buddy? Some big silvers.
Mid-teens.
Yeah.
So, you know, really nice, and some really nice hatchery mid-teen fish, you know? So it's surprising, you know, it's like, oh, that's a wild fish, and you bring it up, and it's like, whoa, it's a hatchery fish. So, yeah, we're catching some really nice cohos, but, you know, not like the old broodstock or the big wild fish we used to get up to 24 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez Louise. What's a big king this year? What's the biggest Chinook you've seen so far?
45 is my biggest so far.
That's
yeah.
big enough.
Yeah, awesome. On a twitchy. Yeah, 25 yeah. minutes. Awesome. It was a nice fish.
Well, and they got a big old head on them. They look more like 60 because their head is just so big. When they get in the river, you know, they just like get morphed out and stuff. That's a beautiful fish, man. Was it bright too, Cromer?
Yeah, beautiful. Sea lights all over him.
Wow.
Mm, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought we'd snag it at first because it was upriver, downriver, all around. And yeah. I actually had to drag the boat up to chase it upriver. And then when it came by the boat, I'm like, wow, that's a big fish. Yeah. And we released it. And we let it go. So I was yeah. really good. I mean, I haven't seen a fish that big in 5-6 years. Yeah. So it was yeah. good to release those big fish, get those genetics, keep them in the river, keep them where they need to be, and get those big fish back where we want to add.
So, yeah, for sure. You guys have been doing a good job of not beating up on those fish, letting them go, and kind of metering out the pressure a little bit. And I tell you what, you know, even with the difficult regulations on the steelhead out there last year, you guys made some lemonade, man. You guys had some great mm-hmm. fishing. You were able to get out there and fish from the bank and get your folks into fish, and a little more difficult, a little more, mm-hmm. you know, a few more things to consider, but you guys did fine. The guys that worked, mm-hmm. and I knew you would, you and a couple of the other guys out there, I knew you guys would figure it out. And sure enough, I get the usual text at, you know, 8:30 at 9 o'clock at night of another big steelhead from Mike Z, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, we wish the regulations and would back off a little bit, and the steelhead would start, you know, the numbers would start creeping back up on the coast again. But I guarantee you guys will do your part to make it work. So,
yep.
Mike Z, yeah,
we'll
Mike Z's Guide Service.
We can get these numbers back up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yep. no doubt. Mike Z, Mike Z's Guide Service. Go check him out on Facebook, Mike Z's Guide Service. Mike Zavadlo, good luck, buddy, and thanks for your time this morning, bud.
Later, Mike.
See you, Mike. We'll be in touch, buddy.
Awesome. Right. Yep. Okay, sounds good. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
All right, thank you so much. Coming up next, the hottest report we heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's Roy Orbison RVs, Really? Where? And it's next here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really? Where?
It's coming back. The island of Tinny and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
Ocean Journey Red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got them?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonRV.com's Really? Where? RoyRobinsonRV.com will take you anywhere. Really?
You absolutely owe it to yourself to get to the all-new Roy Robinson RV Center, 15855 Smoky Point Boulevard. You are going to find Class A diesels, Class Bs, Class Cs, Super Cs, travel trailers, fifth wheelers, toy haulers, pop-ups, campers, and so much more. Roy Robinson RV, RoyRobinsonRV.com.
Deer opener today. We've been yapping about that for the last couple hours. Also the waterfowl opener today. It runs through the 24th. A couple days off, then kicks back on again the 27th, right to the end of January. Haven't had a really good handle on duck numbers this year because COVID's pulled a lot of the biologists off the counts up in BC and Alaska and whatnot. But, they still think we're going to be pretty good. I mean, we've been coming off 50-year highs on our duck counts. Now, we're in a drought, and that drought extended well up into BC, up into the nesting ground. So it definitely impacted the waterfowl, but we should be fine on the waterfowl front. I mean, heck, we've had over-the-top numbers the last few years and no weather to push them down anyway, so right. we won't even know the difference yeah. here. So, but on the goose front, though, the snow goose numbers might be completely stupid here this winter. By stupid, I mean like insane numbers of snow geese. Wrangel Island over in Russia is where these snow geese come from. Early spring over there, they think the flight could be absolutely huge coming from Wrangel Island in Russia. The biologist, again, they didn't really get a good handle on the count, but just judging by that early spring and the huge flight we had last year, it could be good. And there's already a pile of them in eastern Washington. This flight is almost splitting now, and part of it, a good chunk of it now, is going down into eastern Washington. The rest are pouring into the Fraser Valley and Skagit and now Snohomish County as well. So the limits have been bumped up. The limit is now 10 per day and 20 on the late season. There's a bonus late season now for snow geese. The limit is 20 on that late season. Now we need a lobby for magazine extensions yeah. on our yeah. shotguns.
That's what I want.
Okay. I mean, I want a full Tommy gun looking kind of thing when yeah. I hit that late season.
Drum.
So, yeah, I want a
Put
drum.
A drum on the brown.
I want a drum on mine. But regardless, I mean, that's the bright spot here. And also the honker counts, in, you know, even in California, Oregon, eastern Washington were really good. Even with the drought. So I think we're going to see some good numbers of geese, but it's just the ducks that are kind of a little bit of a question right now. But regardless, it doesn't matter. We'll be out there doing it anyway.
I got some, you know, intel from some of the wackos we hang out with. And they've been out, you know, they go scouting. Mm-hmm. They're like out scouting for ducks, and they're seeing some ducks, man.
Good deal.
There's a bunch of ducks around up north.
Yep. So, good deal.
And more, I go outside and I hear snows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You hear them almost throughout the day. Yeah.
And you really depend on those juveniles. They're the ones that will decoy. The adult snows, good luck.
They're tough.
Those white geese, good luck. But those ones with the mottled feathers, those are the ones that that we make a living on, you know, during the snow goose season. Razor Clam opener this week on Tuesday the 19th through the 25th. Go look at the calendar. There's 44 razor clam digging days left between now and the end of end of the year, December 31st.
If you
miss this one, I know. Bob Buchanan is just rubbing his hands together right now. Down to Bomac. Send me another container of clam guns. Yeah. I mean, there's just a pile of razor clams on the coast. And the last dig, it blew like crazy. The weather was horrible. There were really late night digs, so hardly anybody hit the coast. There's still just tons of clams out there for this dig. But again, if you miss this one, don't worry. There's plenty more days. Coho fishing, it's all a river show right now, folks. Cowlitz, lower cowlitz, there's coho in there right now. Hump tulips, green, sawduck, Skagit River, Cascade. I'm assuming there's a few down in the Carbon, too, down Puyallup around the Carbon there. And also the Green River as well. Did I already mention that? Yeah, Green River. Trout fishing, they're hitting the lakes already. They're planting trout right now. Dave Johnson from Kitsap Marina, of course, has been out hitting the trout. If Kitsap Lake, a pile of lakes are getting trout right now. So go check out the counts on the WDFW website. And we got some crabbing, too. I mean, Everett, north
solid,
end of Hood Canal has been good. I talked to Connor at John Sporting Goods. He's like, man, it's been red hot up out of Everett. So I know you guys will be out there doing that soon.
Been really solid. Yeah, no question about it. Good luck to everybody that's heading out or already out today for opening day, whether it's ducks or pheasants or geese or deer like us, man. I just, you know, can't wait to get out of here and tear it up. Good luck to you guys too today, man. You just, you know, let me know.
See you in a bit, Joe. We'll carpool over.
No question. Yep. All right. Missed any of the show? Jump on MyNorthWest.com or TheOutdoorLine.com. Download that at Apple iTunes iPod app. Excuse me. I won't screw that up, man. How about the podcast app? How about that right there?
Yep. There we go. Awesome.
Give us a follow on social media at Joe Pyburn, at Rob Ensley, at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For Matt Nelson and Rob Ensley back in the Seattle studios, this has been Tom Nelson and Joey Pyburn here for The Outdoor Line. 710.
Good luck, guys.
ESPN,
go get a deer.
Seattle.
Go shoot some deers.